No college football games to recap or look forward to, nonetheless. A lot to chat about. Our guest does this thing for USA Today online, usatoday.com, on Twitter, at George Schroeder. George, good Wednesday to you, sir. How are things?
Things are good. How are you?
Okie dokie. Fighting a little bit of a cold, but I think I'm
sorry
winning.
About that.
I think I'm winning. One of the things I like to do after any season is you go back to the beginning, and you could read the early polls or predictions, whether it's the NBA or NFL, and see where the surprises or disappointments were. So I know it seems like there's almost a little game in here. If we start with Michigan, who made a lot of off-season noise, started 11th in the poll, year three under Jim Harbaugh, won 10 games his first two, and 8-5. When you think about, and you know, you got some up close and personal time, what stands out about how this season went to you for the Wolverines?
Well, listen, I mean, it's a fairly inexperienced team, and so there may have been a little bit of overhype on them. Winning 8, losing 5 is not what anybody expected. I think another 10-win season would have been fine. I think the idea that they were going to be better than Penn State and Ohio State was probably incorrect. But they fell short in some other places, too. Here's the thing. It has to be viewed as a disappointment. It should not be viewed, I don't think, as a giant disappointment. However, they need to be a lot better next year. I think they will be. One of the promising things from the offseason, or as we're entering the offseason, is the transfer from Ole Miss of Shea Patterson, the quarterback, who's going to be eligible. So you can look at that a couple different ways, and I think they're both correct. One, they're going to be better next year. They are going to be better next year.
All righty.
Okay, but two, they've got to be better next year, and he's going to have a quarterback, and there's not going to be any more excuses. Frankly, it's a little bit inexplicable that they haven't been able to find consistently decent quarterback play in this first few years at Michigan. You know, one of the things that, you know, maybe you have an Andrew Luck, everything seems to be better, but they didn't just win with Andrew Luck with Jim Harbaugh. So it's time for them to find a way to not lose to Michigan State, and more importantly, find a way to beat Ohio State. I'm not sure that I would predict that yet, but they will be better next year, I think.
All right. And then after firing Charlie Strong, who ended his career at Texas, going 5-7 the back-to-back years, the Longhorns brought in Tom Herman, had a great 2015 at Houston, decent 2016, two crazy non-conference games early in the year, Maryland and USC, close losses. They looked decent defensively. Began the year ranked just inside the top 25. So when you think about Texas this year, what pops into your head?
Well, let me just say this. It's inevitable that after beating a Missouri team that wasn't very good in the Texas Bowl and finishing 7-6 instead of 6-7, they're going to be overhyped going into next year because they're Texas. And I think they're a little bit overhyped going into this previous season, the one you're talking about. It's just who they are. That said, I think Tom Herman is going to get it done. I think they like Sam Ehlinger at quarterback. We'll see where that goes. I'm not sure he's the long-term answer, but I like Texas trending up. I don't believe they're going to be ready to contend for the Big 12 title next year. Don't believe we're looking at them certainly as a playoff contender at all. But I think they're going to trend up, and you're going to see them win 8 or 9 and beat somebody. And I don't really know what I think about the entire Big 12 conference next year. I mean, I think Oklahoma's probably still the class of the conference. But it wouldn't surprise me to see those guys take a half step back after you lose Baker Mayfield. I mean, they've got a kid coming in, Kyler Murray, who's been sitting there, the former A&M player,
right,
who's really, really good. But I don't know that people understand just how much a difference Baker Mayfield made until they see that team with a lot of returning players, but without him. So I know I strayed from your original question.
That's okay. Oklahoma
I like
counts.
Texas to be Baylor, to be better. Or not to be Baylor, but to be better, which would be better than Baylor.
Right.
But I don't know that I'm ready to go with Texas's back. You know, that's
sure.
An easy thing to do, and I don't know that I saw anything this year that would lead me to believe that that's going to be a quick process.
We're recapping this football season, George Schroeder, USA Today. I talk a lot about Oklahoma State. Mike Gundy amuses me to no end. And, you know, he's got him on an unprecedented run of success for the program. You mentioned a great quarterback. How about Mason Rudolph? And we just learned that the defensive struggles cost their coordinator, Glenn Spencer, his job. But he won 10 games, ended in the top 15. So this year, a good year as expected. What pops about this team that resides in your home state?
Well, it could only really be considered a disappointing year. I mean, they thought they were going to contend for the Big 12 title. They, in fact, really didn't and, you know, fell a notch or two shy. And it wasn't just the defense. The offense, you know, wasn't able to keep up in the significant shootouts. But it has to be considered a disappointment. And you know, at some point, for all he's done with the program, if the goal is to win Big 12 titles and be in the playoff, and that is the goal, then you have to figure out your Oklahoma problem. Now, that's not a Mike Gundy deal. That's a 100-year problem for Oklahoma State. Yeah. Okay, that's just one of those historical things. But if you're going to get to where you want to get to, you've got to go through those guys. And so there's no way you can consider it anything but a disappointment. And they're going to take a step back this year, much like I think Oklahoma will, in that, you know, you mentioned Mason Rudolph. Well, they lose Mason Rudolph. He was a tremendous quarterback for them. They don't really maybe have quite as ready-made or maybe as ready a capable replacement. Yeah, we'll see. It could end up being a true freshman starting next year. And then the defensive stuff is sort of up in arms. I actually thought that Glenn Spencer did a pretty nice job at a place where defense has not typically been emphasized. Oklahoma State built its program under Mike Gundy in a similar fashion to how Oregon fans will recall how the Ducks really built themselves with offense.
Right.
And I'm going way back before Chip Kelly ever showed up. But under Mike Bellotti, they built themselves on offense and recruited to offense, and defense always seemed to get short shrift, whether that's fair or not, whether that was the intent or not. That's sort of the way it seemed to play out. That's a little bit how it's been in terms of how Oklahoma State's built its program, and they're going to have to get better on defense, much like Oregon did when it got good. They were actually a lot better on defense than people gave them credit for.
Sure.
If Oklahoma State wants to get there, they've got to find a way to do that too.
Let's move out here to USC. I remember, well, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, it seemed Oklahoma's always top five in the preseason polls, underachieved a little bit. Now, the last couple of years, USC was looked at possibly as a playoff team. You know, second full season under Clay Helton, Sam Darnold, a talented guy. But, you know, they lost big to Notre Dame. Only a 3-point loss at Pullman prevented them from being perfect in conference. And, of course, they got worked by Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl. How do you view this season for the Trojans?
Well, I you know, listen, the standards are so high at USC, and coming off the way they finished last year, where they were so hot and won that classic Rose Bowl matchup with Penn State, and how that fueled, you know, always high, as I mentioned, expectations, you got to think it's a disappointment. I mean, you really do. I mean, because when look, losing on a Friday night in Pullman is a tough deal, and that's maybe a product of a 9-game conference schedule and wacky Pac-12 conference scheduling. You know, who's to say if you played an 8-game conference schedule like certain other leagues, cough, cough, you might not have caught that. If you didn't schedule games on Friday night on the road, maybe you don't. You know what I mean? So, now, I'm not trying to make excuses. I'm just saying those kinds of things can happen in that kind of a tough schedule, the way the Pac-12 is set up. But you're right. They got rolled by Notre Dame, and they got worked, as you said, by Ohio State. And their standard is to be the team that's competing with the elite and maybe rolling the elite. And they were clearly at least a half step below elite and maybe further. You know, the fact is that whatever argument there was among the selection committee between Alabama and Ohio State, you had another team with two losses sitting out there that was a Power 5 champion that wasn't even considered in that mix. There wasn't a three-team consideration, which tells you that the committee, and I think rightly so, didn't see USC as a playoff-caliber team. That's disappointing.
Let's stay here and get to Oregon, who, in essence, experienced upheaval for the first time since they became relevant when Coach Helfrich was let go. Willie Taggart came in, some good moments, the Justin Herbert injury, the poor play of the backup, then their coach leaves, becoming a one-and-done. So, you know, they get four coaches over 40 years. Now they'll have three over 3 years. how will history view this unique season for the Ducks?
A lot. In terms of how history will review it, it's going to have a lot to do with, on the first, how Mario Cristobal does, and two, second, how Willie Taggart does at Florida State probably will be a secondary thing, not nearly as big a deal. I mean, he could have great success or not, and it won't be as big a deal, but that'll be a piece of how you view it. But if Mario comes in and they get it done, and if we just sort of cast aside the bowl game and just say, all right, that was a tough situation for everybody, because it certainly didn't reflect well on anything. No. Let's just say that that was a time of upheaval, as you put it, and let's just reset right now. If they go on and they become a North contender and get back into the top 10 regularly and find their way into the playoff and all the things that Duck fans have gotten used to over the last decade, then we'll just view this as, well, it was a tough year, and frankly, it was a tough 2 years, and it was just a weird time. But if 2 or 3 years from now we're going, wow, they're about to make another coaching change, then we're going to look at this year a little bit differently. Because, by the way, if they do sort of fall into sort of a spate of mediocrity, and I'm not projecting that, but if they do,
sure,
it's going to be hard to climb out of it. Because, you know, the conditions on the ground in the Pac-12 North are not what they were when Oregon rose to power.
Sure.
You had Stanford. Washington historically bad when Oregon really got historically good. You had a run of coaches at Washington who were not Chris Peterson. And now you've got, and I'll just stick with Washington. I mean, Stanford doesn't appear to be going anywhere, but I'll just stick with Washington. I don't think Chris Peterson's about to take many steps back. I think they're going to be really good next year and for the years to come. And so that makes it harder. So Oregon can't afford to slide down and stay down.
No, I agree with you about the Huskies, and generally I duck when I say that around here, but it doesn't make it any less true. A couple final thoughts for George Schroeder. So after Willie Taggart departed for Florida State, a name that surfaced here was Kevin Sumlin, and he did land in the Pac-12, but at Arizona. You know, he had big success at a mid-major, and then it just seems like the Wildcats always come up short. They've been in this league 40 years, never won the conference. What do you make of the hire of Kevin Sumlin in Tucson?
Well, given that it was a weird time for a hire, and that it didn't fit the regular coaching carousel, and given that Kevin Sumlin was available, I think that's a tremendous hire for them. And that's making lemonade out of lemons, to use a bad old tire cliche. And I think Kevin Sumlin's a very nice coach. Is he elite? As you know, the Aggies would say, he's not elite, and we need an elite coach to get us to be in, you know, Texas A&M being the program it should be. Maybe that's true. He's a very good coach. He did well in a very, very tough division in the SEC West, and I think he'll do well in Tucson. Now, the platform's not the same as it was in College Station. It's a little bit harder to recruit there, but I think Kevin Sumlin is a really good recruiter. I think he's a very good coach, and I think he'll do fine there. The question in my mind is this. Obviously, he was available, which is great for the Wildcats. What are his long-term intentions?
Yep.
Is he going to hop? If the right job comes available, he'll be somebody that people will see as attractive for all the reasons I just said. Is he going to be committed? Or is he going to be the guy who, you know, if the right gig comes open, and I don't know what that is. I don't know what the next sort of big Power 5 job to come open is right now. But is he going to be the guy that, if his name gets mentioned, is really ready to go? And I don't know that.
All right, and finally, Herm Edwards, one of my favorite people in sports. I just think he's credible. He's got a great moral compass. Hey, I'm old enough. I remember him as a heck of a player with the Eagles. But the last time he coached in college was 1989. Hadn't coached anywhere since 9 years ago. This was out of left field. And we know the ASU athletic director hired Bobby Hurley and now Edwards. What do you make of, let's call it, a unique decision?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the best and nicest way you can put it. It's certainly true that it's unique. Look, I think Herm Edwards is a really good man. I don't know him personally, but what I know of him, I have respect for him. And maybe he's a good football coach, okay? But he has demonstrated just in the first few weeks on the job that I'm not sure he really understood what he was in for, because what big-time college football coaching is. And I'm not actually talking about the fact that it's pretty clear he had no idea that the mascot was the Sun Devils in that first press conference. And I know most of your listeners know what I'm talking about, but it's pretty clear he had no idea why an outlet called Devil Digest or Devil's Digest would be covering them. And, you know, and anybody who understands what their mascot is understands that. But it's not just hiring him. It's sort of this whole idea that we're going to remake the paradigm of how you run a college football program that is – I don't know if it's troubling, but it's concerning to me, and I'm skeptical of. Sometimes, and real quick, what basically, and I don't know if it'll play out this way because both coordinators ended up leaving, but the idea was keep both coordinators from Todd Graham's staff and have them have a more autonomy or authority than they had before, and then sort of almost have Herm Edwards serve as sort of a quasi-general manager for this new way to do things and reevaluate how you do everything, including recruiting and this, that, and the other. And that's great, I guess. Sometimes people invent an iPhone, Steve, every so often.
Right.
But a lot of times it's more like ESPN the phone. And I don't know if you remember that, but back in 2006, ESPN, with great fanfare, announced some sort of a deal with one of the phone companies where they were going to have a phone that would show you video clips from SportsCenter. That seems crazy to us now since everybody has a smartphone and we can get all the video we want.
Right.
But that was supposed to be a big deal. Well, it went over like a lead balloon. And then, you know, a year or so later, they introduced the iPhone, and that did revolutionize everything. But for every iPhone, there's a whole bunch of bad ideas, and that's, this feels like it will either revolutionize things or it's going to be terrible. No in between.
Folks, I give you New Coke and the Edsel.
That's much better. New Coke is a pretty good way to put it. Although, you know, the reason I said the iPhone is we don't know, for example, if this is the iPhone. I don't think so. I think ESPN the phone. But, you know, we don't know yet. We know what New Coke did.
Yes, we do. George, great stuff and insight as always. Find his work, usatoday.com. Pick up a copy at a newsstand, on Twitter, at George Schroeder. Always fun catching up, George. Appreciate the insight. You have a good one.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Bye.